Final hour of the program here. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Jason Longshore on after Mio. I believe he is for Atlanta Soccer Tonight, the usual Tuesday evening programming here on Sports Radio 92.9. The Game will get you caught up on everything World Cup related, everything going on with the U.S. squad. So make sure you stick around for that. We've been talking about a ton of stuff here. Obviously, Falcons leading the way for the conversation tonight. Took a ton of phone calls earlier in the show. If you couldn't get through, hit me up at C Thomas Radio. The question we were asking was the following. Is it time, because of the state of the team at 4-9, to have to take a long, hard look at this roster? Did we overhype it? Did we overrate the Atlanta Falcons roster going into this season? Or do you feel like, nah, Turtle, just give us the right coaching staff and this thing will be fixed in a New York minute? I was on that team. We had a conversation about something similar a couple of weeks ago, but this was before they lost to the Jets and the Seattle Seahawks in the fashion that they did. Now, my concern level is at an all-time high. Obviously, not just for the rest of this season, but for the future. But I was no. This team does not need a roster overhaul. Don't trade any of the best players. Everything here is good. And I still believe that for the most part. But for the first time, after the Jets loss and now the Seattle loss, I am questioning, did we overhype this thing? Did we sell ourselves a little too much on just how good this Falcons roster actually was going into the season? What do you think? 404-726-0929 if you want to chime in. Or again, hit me up on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. We'll hear from Joe Patrick as well. But right now, we got to get to a producer six-pack. Six-pack. I said a producer.
Mouse stuck for a minute. That's never fun.
Well, listen, I know you, a lot of y'all can't see what happens behind the scenes.
It's frantic back here with the fire off.
Yeah, exactly. Oren's doing the job of two people, by the way, every time he executive produces and does all the other things for my show. So I always sympathize with him. And then especially because I've been in that seat. I'm not one of these hosts that is like, oh, come in here and put my feet up and I expect you to do everything I ask you to do. And if you don't, I'm going to rip your head off, because there are certainly hosts like that. But I've been a board op. I've been an associate producer. I've been an executive producer, all at this station, by the way, and other stations across the country as well. So I have the utmost sympathy when you're clicking a button and the button doesn't work. And then your hosts are sitting there behind the glass grilling you as if it's in your control. And Oren, I know a lot of the times it's not in our control.
It is not in our control.
So. But anyway, we press on. We digress. What you got?
All righty, sir. Question number one. It was funny today watching Mets fans crash out in real time. Oh boy, today was a big crash out day for fans of the New York Mets.
Where's Uncle Steve with the wallet? Where is he?
He's tightening those purse strings right now. I guess he's buying Christmas gifts for not buying free agents. So spending money on those.
More of that art that he loves to collect.
Stupid art. One of the recent more famous Mets fans, Barstool Frank, good old Frank. Him finding out
the Braves never lose,
and then him biting the little his glasses and whatever. This guy's a character. He's a New York Mets fan, a huge New York sports fan in general, but lives and dies with the Mets. Speaking of dies,
he almost like he was knocking on death's door. Yeah, he was probably about 550
doing his walks.
And he has turned his life around.
Yeah, doing his walks.
That dude has lost like 200 pounds doing walks around New York City and changing his diet. It's actually pretty impressive. He's a maniac nonetheless.
He is a maniac. And his mania today was focused on a deal that did not happen. The Dodgers swooped in like they always do, and they are not afraid to open up those purse strings and let some dollars fly. Signing Edwin Diaz.
Yeah.
signed him to a 3-year, $69 million deal, which
nice
is the highest per-year average for a reliever in Major League history. So it kind of makes the Rizal Iglesias thing like, I guess we got him at a discount for 1 year what we're paying him instead of having to pay a guy for three years.
If we get second half Rizal Iglesias. If we get first half Rizal Iglesias.
No, not worth it.
$16 million would not be a bargain.
But a scale here of 1 to 10, 10 being the absolute dumbest and 10 being the absolute smartest. The Mets letting Diaz go to the Dodgers. Where do you rate that on the scale?
I'd put it right smack in the middle out of 5, and I know that's boring, but Oren, they just signed Devin Williams.
Oh, him, yes.
So, like,
you saw him front and center last year,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, so essentially.
It's a wash. It's a strong arm for a fastball for a changeup.
Yeah, essentially, they have their next closer, so they weren't going to pay two guys. So I get it. But yeah, he's been a Met. We'll always remember that. But Edwin Diaz will join the litany of abundance in L.A. as that team is
just point and click, man.
Yeah, that's
you get who they get,
Manfred.
Man.
We need to do something at some point.
Just point and say, like, that's the guy. But, you know, we're talking about the Mets owner here. Billionaire guy. And this is a guy who you just sort of let walk when you
not just a billionaire, Oren. Try like 30 billion.
Yeah, he's got lots of billions. Lots of billions of dollars. Question number two. So we have our top four seeds in the CFP, the College Football Playoff. You got Indiana, Ohio State, Georgia, and Texas Tech all get byes. The first round games, the next, I guess, highest seeds you got here. Oregon, Ole Miss, Texas Tech,
A&M,
Alabama, and Oklahoma. I'm not going to include James Madison and Tulane just because I think, you know, they are who they are, group of five teams. But of that next tier of teams I listed, let's say teams 5 through 10, 10 being Miami, is there a team in that group that you think can make it to the CFP championship?
Yeah, I think this year's wide open, Oren. Like, is Ohio State that much better than anybody, like everybody else? They struggled against Indiana. I mean, we saw them get exposed on offense. So, yeah, I would say everybody outside of Tulane and James Madison, which are nice stories, but let's be realistic. Maybe Oklahoma, too, if Mateer is not 100%. But, Oren, any other team, I think, has a realistic shot, don't you?
Yeah, I would say, too, it's just a matter of, like, we haven't seen a team, I guess, except for Indiana, be consistently stout. And even Indiana had a couple of moments, was like the Penn State game or something, where they had to get a win
late. They had
late
to come all the way back.
Kind of come back, but just be
consistent. But let me put it to you this way, though. If Alabama goes on a 2, would you be shocked? Ty Simpson had an incredible year.
He did up until about the last month of the season. They're playing bad football at the wrong time of the year. And they've gotten some bad injuries, too, at the wrong time of the year. So just what you don't want to start happening is your team to go – you don't want to peak too early, I guess, and now it is for the College Football Playoff Committee, you know, the rankings and whatnot. You don't want to be that team that you look at it like
– no premature peaking, Oren.
No premature peaking, no. You want to be the right time peaking.
Absolutely exactly. No premature peaking. Your girlfriend doesn't like that either.
No comment on that one, sir. Some news from the NFL roster wire today. One 44-year-old Philip Rivers signed a deal, and he is on the Indianapolis Colts practice squad. They lost Daniel Jones to the Achilles injury. Anthony Richardson is not back from popping himself in the eye and fracturing an orbital bone.
One of the weirder NFL injuries of all time.
Stretching a band before
and
a
game.
And
he's been out the whole year.
Basically, yeah. And then Riley Leonard, the guy who backed up Daniel Jones last week.
Good old Riley Leonard.
Notre Dame finest. And Duke's finest, too. He injured his knee, and his status very much right now is in doubt. So they signed Philip Rivers to the practice squad. Philip Rivers starts how many games this year for the Indianapolis Colts?
It should be 0, Oren. This guy's going to get broken in half.
He's
hasn't played in 5 years. Dude, like,
Jonathan
his body's gonna
have
not
57
ready.
Carries in each of the games he plays.
His body is not ready to take a hit.
You don't think him coaching high school football got him ready to take some punishment?
I have no doubt dude could still sling it. That's not what this is about. Okay. They play the Seahawks.
Who we saw front and center last week here in Atlanta.
49ers, Jaguars, and then they finish with the Texans. Danielle Hunter is going to rip Philip Rivers in half.
That poor dude.
He's going to tear him in half. He's going to put him in between his bicep and his shoulder.
Just squeeze.
Like a nutcracker and just pop his head off from his shoulders. I mean, he'll probably get a couple of starts, but God, Orin, I hope not, man. I want to see Philip live. I mean,
he's not much. He's what? Flacco's what? 40, right?
But Flacco never stopped playing.
That's true. Yeah.
Like his body's always been in
Flacco's been,
football
been
shape.
In the game. Yes.
Like Philip Rivers is going to drop back. An offensive lineman is going to step on his ankle. It's going to shatter.
That's going to be it.
And then he's going to be done. Like that's it, man. For five years.
Philip Rivers has been down in, Fairhope, Alabama, coaching his kid's high school football
team.
One
of his 18 children.
And one of his kids is actually a highly rated Division I quarterback in next year's quarterback class, too. So,
well, maybe he could play with it. Maybe he could pull a LeBron and play with his son in the NFL.
Less likely to happen, sir. Less likely to happen. Let's head to the NFC East. The Cowboys make the playoffs, or the Eagles actually winning a playoff game? Less likely.
Oh, the Cowboys making the – they need to win out. That's the only way they make the playoffs is if they win out, and I just don't think they're going to. I think they're good, but they're not great. What's going on with Pickens? He's a head case. He was doing great, and then what happened?
He started going off, was it Richard Sherman?
Yeah, like what are we doing? Nah, the Eagles – the Eagles
they
can still find
so
a they
bad
looked awful.
Last
but you know what, Orin?
They've looked so bad the last month and a half of the season.
The talent is still there, though. The talent's still there. I'm going to bank on the Eagles.
All right. Weekend plans, sir. What you got going on?
Oh, we are doing me and the girlfriend and her family on Saturday are going to like a Christmas village thing. Mandatory couple Christmas time.
Are you guys going to dress similarly?
We are wearing matching flannel, as a matter of fact, Orin.
Okay.
And pictures will be taken, and gingerbread cookies will be had.
Aww.
And fun by all. And then Sunday, we're going to go see Wicked.
Okay.
So it is a very couple-y, romantic, fun weekend. But I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. Good job on the six-pack, Orin. When we get back, Joe Patrick stops by. You want the latest from Flowery Branch, do not go anywhere. Our Falcons Insiders got you covered on Chris Thomas Tonight. Right now, we got to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our Falcons Insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on football for all the latest on the Dirty Birds. Joe, the second half of that game, I mean, just the biggest gut punch of all gut punches. What did you see in that sort of 5-6 minute span of game time that caused this thing to go from a 6-6 tie to a game that was out of reach?
Yeah, you know, I know it's kind of the notion that they quit is kind of, you know, the thing that gets floated around. I never want to kind of say that players are quitting, and I don't think that that's actually what happened, but I do think that they were deflated, you know, and I think it stems really from, and this is kind of corroborated by what Raheem Morris had to say afterwards. I talked to Jesse Bates in the locker room, and he can confirm this as well, which is that kick return that started that second half really kind of took the wind out of the sails. And, you know, for as much as you wish that that wouldn't happen, and you obviously want a resilient football team that bounces back and does all that stuff, I just think that there's an understanding within this team that, and it's not like something that they go out and say, but just like within everybody, they kind of all understand that they're just not that talented, especially on the offensive side of the football right now with what they have in the wide receiver room. And they just don't have the ability to play on those kinds of margins when they're giving up points in special teams like they have, not just this week, but obviously the week before and earlier this season. I think that it's really just starting. We're starting to see it affect the team more and more. And you're right. It wasn't just that. You know, then the offense goes down and Bijan Robinson fumbles an unfortunate fumble when he's had such a great year and had a great game in that game that's kind of gotten overlooked, obviously, because of the failings of the team overall. And just feels like that's the way the Falcons season is going right now. You know, it's unraveling, you know, in a way that no organization wants to see their football team at this time of the year.
How do you even begin to explain the state of the wide receiver room?
Oh man, it's rough. And obviously, we see now, and not that it was evident before, but just how much Drake London and his greatness kind of really has covered up a lot of the issues that are in that wide receiver room this year. And, you know, I didn't think it was a bad receiver room coming into the season, but clearly the broken collarbone that Darnell Mooney suffered on the first day of training camp definitely seems like it had an effect on his ability to mesh with Michael Penix and to be able to put in the kind of productive season that he had last year. Then I think what really seems to have, you know, sparked, you know, a real change in this wide receiver room from what it was last year was the firing of Mike Hilliard that happened after week three. And obviously that's, a coach that was leading that room. And, you know, in the fallout of that, you have an issue with Ray McCloud that ends up seeing him being released from the football team. And, you know, he was an important receiver for this team last year. He had over 600 yards receiving. And when you go back and look at his highlight reel, basically, from last year, you see how much Kirk Cousins was utilizing him and how many times he had, you know, pretty big, significant moments in games where he was picking up chunk yardage, maybe not necessarily catching the ball down the field, but certainly catching the ball in underneath areas and being able to move. That was, you know, what the team had planned for him. You know, I remember when Raheem Morris was talking about putting this wide receiver room together 2 years ago, he was talking about, you know, we want our deep guy, and that's Darnell Mooney. We want our intermediate guy, that's Drake London. Then we want our underneath guy in the flats, and that's Ray McCloud. And he certainly had a role. And it just doesn't feel like you have those players with that clear vision and that clear understanding with, you know, their strengths and skill sets and what they're being asked to do by Zach Robinson in this offense right now. And I think that that's why this offense just feels, you know, so discombobulated and so just kind of impotent at this point in time.
Joe, my word's not yours, but again this week when asked about no special teams changes coming this week, Raheem Morris's message to me, and you can interpret it however you want to interpret here when I ask you, it seemed like he answered with, why bother?
Yeah. Can you repeat that again real quick? Because I'm in the car and you broke up on me there.
Yeah, no problem. It just seems like Raheem Morris's messaging this week when pressed again about making a change at special teams alluded to saying, why bother at this point?
Right, right. And I asked him that question, and I feel like it's a necessary question that needs to be asked because of the precedent that was set with Ike Hilliard and him being fired for quote-unquote performance reasons. And since then, when I inquired about it last week, he was able to give us a little bit, you know, more background into that performance kind of being related to the communication and everything. But yeah, the answer that he gave in response to me this week was, yeah, Chris, it was like, we're not making a change. It's basically too late in the season. Like, that's kind of the way I took it, was the staff is what it is at this point. We have 4 games left and, you know, we're going to ride it out. And, you know, I suppose there's merit to that because it's like, there is only 4 games left. How much is a new coach or a different coach actually going to change things? We might be better off, you know, just kind of not doing that, I guess. But, you know, something I've kind of put out there, and I did ask Raheem about this. I do want to kind of convey this to the audience, is that, you know, to me, when your special teams is going this awry, it's on the head coach to really get it right. And I was just thinking about, like, you know, this is kind of partly what Bill Belichick kind of built his, you know, prestige over. He obviously is a great defensive mind, but also it's like the special teams, you know, he would have those kind of famous press conference moments of talking about the history of long snapping and things like that for a long time. And, you know, clear the special teams is kind of like a vital sign, right, for a football team going right. To me, obviously the special teams coordinator has a place, but it's the onus of the head coach to make sure it's going well. And so maybe that's the tack that Raheem Morris is taking. What I wanted to say that I wanted to convey was that Raheem Morris did say that he is working hands-on with the players. Now, you know, the exact extent of that, don't know, but it's good to hear that he is kind of, he is hands-on with the guys. But the way I envision it, Chris, is that, you know, if the head coach, or if the special teams is like this, you know, this, the head coach of any football team has been coaching football for a long time and can certainly coach players up on techniques they need to be using. If he needs to be in there during the special teams meetings, you know, helping break down the tape and identifying clearly what the issues are and making sure it's, the message is translated to the players, how to address those issues. That to me is what the head coach needs to be doing. And so we'll see if there's any improvement considering there's such a magnifying glass on it now after the mistakes have been made recently.
Curious to get your opinion on this as well. It seems like their strategy for both the defensive front and the offensive front has backfired this season in terms of going with the more lean and athletic offensive and defensive line fronts. They really miss a giant run stuffer in the middle, and they certainly miss some power on the offensive line. It looks like the Ryan Nuziel experiment has gone okay at best. Jake Matthews, I think, has been penalized heavily this season, way more so than usual, maybe because of the injury. Maybe he's lost a step. Maybe it's both. But it feels like, Joe, they tried to go with more of a sleek offensive and defensive line, and there's just too many big boys in the NFL to do that week in and week out.
Yeah, you know, and it's not like it can't work. I mean, like, we've seen this offensive line, for example, actually kind of even quote-unquote leaner, if we're talking about, like, you know, the physiques of the players when Drew Dolman was the center here, and they were one of the best run teams in the NFL at that point in time. But it was built on a very clear identity that Arthur Smith had for this team's run game, which was to get under center and run that outside zone and then run the, you know, the play-action concepts off of it. And you had Caleb McGarry, and not having him this year is really hurting this team and being able to have like that bread and butter play, you know, that you just feel like you can just, you know, push that easy button and make things go and know that you're going to get yourself in a manageable down and distance on the next play. And they just haven't, it just feels like everything's been really hard to come back. Like, every yard is well earned. And I think it's because they just don't have that dominance in some areas on that offensive line like they have had in years past. And I think it's worth noting, like, Drew Dolman having a great year with the Bears this year in a resurgent Ben Johnson offense that's very similar to what Arthur Smith runs. Yeah, I do wonder if, you know, decision makers are second guessing the decision that was made to let Drew Dolman walk. And then you're right, on the defensive front, it does feel like they need a true nose at this point. And I understand, like, I think the defensive front has actually improved and impressed in several ways, but you're, especially against the pass, but you're right, like, against the run, they just need some more, just some more mass there in the middle. And it's not been for lack of trying. You know, they've tried to, you know, they have used and are still using LaKeia London. They've gone to Sam Roberts, who they picked up off of waivers from the Panthers. They have gotten all, you know, different guys in here, but it feels like it's time where they could use maybe a draft pick or go out and get an established veteran who can really, like, lock that down for you. Because you feel like if you do have that, then you do have a lot of dynamic defensive linemen around that player and linebackers. But I would say both, you know, like, Caden Ellis is not even kind of a traditional off-ball linebacker. He's turned into that, and I think he's a pretty good one. But it still would, I think, benefit him and Divine Diablo a ton to have just some more mass up there on that defensive front. Again, specifically just for, like, first and second down. And then you can kind of get into some of your other packages. But, yeah, that's just something that they felt like, you know, they had to do. And part of it, Chris, is because – you know, let's face it, like, funds are not zero, or they are zero sum, and they just, you know, when you make bad investments in certain areas, that limits the amount of money that you have to go spend. And, you know, probably one of the reasons, for example, they went with Ryan Nuziel, just because they felt like he was an affordable option. He's going to allow them to go out and then sign Divine Diablo and do all some of these other things. So, you know, it may not be even the fact that they wanted to do some of these things, but it's what they were kind of forced into having to do because of, you know, the way the roster has been managed.
before I let you go, obviously neither one of us have a crystal ball, but have you been starting to sniff around some people talking about Raheem maybe coming back next year?
Yeah, you know, I talked about this on episode of Joe Patrick on Football, which we'll probably be publishing tomorrow. I know I recorded it today, but I've, like, heard that talk, like, and I don't know if this is just, like, kind of media members talking to media and kind of, like, you know, what do you think? And like, story, like, narratives kind of, or not narratives, but just, like, assumptions, I guess, start to get made because of that. I don't think that, yeah, it's weird that it would change, like, more in Raheem's favor in, like, the 48 hours since that debacle against Seattle. And that's why, for me, it's hard to make sense of that line of thinking. You know, I think the notion is that, like, this team is kind of not going to be good next year, and so you might as well keep a coach like him around just to kind of suffer through that year. But I actually see it as the opposite. I see it as, like, you need to get, if you are kind of leaning towards making a change, whether it's now or at a year from now, whatever, like, you should just get that project underway right now so you can start to build the building blocks. And maybe even if it is a down year, you can allow a new coach to get familiar with some of the players and how he wants to utilize some of these pieces. So, whether there's any truth to that, I don't know. I think obviously the state, maybe what has triggered this was Raheem Morris saying that, you know, Arthur Blank has 100% confidence, or, you know, has his 100% belief in him. I forget the exact quote that was said, but we'll see. You know, I think all the speculation will obviously come into clear view here in about a month, where we'll get some real answers after the season.
Joe, appreciate it as always. We'll be checking out the pod. Talk next week.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
That is good stuff there from our buddy Joe Patrick, who stops by every single Tuesday with all the latest on the Dirty Birds. When we get back to close up shop, Raheem Morris did meet the media. Can't promise you're going to like what you're going to hear, but I can promise that I'll play for you to close up shop here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Take us with you anytime, anywhere. Odyssey app. Last chance for romance here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you until the top of the hour. Jason Longshore comes your way then with a ton going on in the world of soccer, both locally and internationally. Make sure you stay tuned for all of Jason's expert analysis. Oren, before we get into some Raheem Morris audio, I want everybody to hear. The Morning Show did one of their infamous lists today.
Uh-oh.
Top 5 Christmas movies of all time.
Oh, boy.
It was a terrible list. I'm not even, that's not the point. They are not good at making lists, that show. Not, I love Mike Johnson dearly. You know,
well, he wasn't there today, though.
No, but it was Allie's list, and it wasn't good either. Dylan doesn't make good lists. Bo doesn't make good lists. Nobody on that show is a good list maker. I don't know why that particular area is such a weakness for them, but collectively as a show, they struggle mightily to come up with good lists. But that's not the point. The theme of said list got me thinking. They were ranking Christmas movies. Now, I don't want to get into a conversation about ranking Christmas movies. What I'm interested in is it for you and your family, and it could be any holiday, whatever holiday you celebrate, it applies all the same. Is there a set time of year, Oren, that you and your family begin to watch holiday movies? And then part B, are there, you know, 3, 4, 5 that are watched every year, like, regardless?
So that's funny you mentioned that. Love Actually was one that
Love Actually. Wow, okay.
But we had to stop that tradition because my mom, a lovely woman, but we decided one year, let's watch Love Actually with my mom.
She's a PG type of gal.
And I totally forgotten how that movie starts.
That's
and
right.
Other various scenes in the movie, and how two people are at a certain location where they meet and are talking. And my mom, the good sport that she is, got about 20 minutes into it, and she's like, yeah, I think I'm going to go to bed.
It just didn't agree with her sensibilities.
It just did not work. Yeah. And I'm sitting there watching it, looking at my wife like, oh, this is a big mistake.
Whoops.
This is a big mistake. But to answer your question, though, probably – see, Wifey's a big, big Christmas movie
like,
person.
Is there any Christmas festivity going on Thanksgiving?
Ooh, the day after Thanksgiving, maybe. Not the day of Thanksgiving.
Okay. Are there – so could
no,
that
but
be...
actually, I take that back. This year, though, this year for Thanksgiving – because we hosted this year, we got a couple of Christmas-themed Lego sets, and her niece loves to put together Legos. So we had a Christmas tree one, and she put together a Lego Christmas tree on Thanksgiving for us.
Okay, but no Christmas movies on Thanksgiving.
No Christmas movies on Thanksgiving, no.
So we're looking at probably closer.
I think we did do Christmas Vacation, though, before Thanksgiving hit. Because they were doing a marathon or something on one of the channels with it. So I'm
trying to get like the appropriate timeline here. So if it's within a month, if it's November 25th and on, you know, whatever ABC does the 25 days of Christmas or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's November 25th on, you're in the green, you're in the go zone.
Yes,
I think I would agree with that.
That's still time for it. Because at that point, too, you've already begun to see displays.
Oh, well before that.
Yeah, Christmas stuff in store. So
they're starting to put up stuff in October, which my dad does it's the traditional nuts. Angry dad get
it's
off.
Too early. Too early.
We'll take a picture at, like, you know, Walgreens, and they'll have Christmas stuff up in October. It's not even Halloween yet. Old man yells at clouds. Essentially is exactly what that is. Do you have, other than Love Actually, which is a hysterical choice, are there any other movies?
Not Love Actually anymore, no. No Love Actually,
Well, right. Are there, like, a couple of movies that need to be watched every single year?
So with the little one now, Brittany is a big Charlie Brown fan, so
that's
she tries
me
to watch
too. That's
Charlie
mine,
Brown.
Charlie Brown Christmas.
Sunday, I was watching the Falcons lose another game to the Seahawks. I got a TV by myself to watch that, and on the other TV downstairs, they watch Frosty the Snowman.
That's a classic. The old school one?
The old school Frosty the Snowman, yeah. Elf, that's another one that's probably going to get watched at some point.
Elf has become, I think we can declare Elf the modern day Christmas classic. Like, I think it's reached that status. I really have.
I think you're right.
Like, it's reached all time. Like, if you're ranking the top 10 Christmas movies of all time,
it's
I don't
be on that list.
I think it has to be on that list.
Wife likes It's a Wonderful Life.
Of course. Which the original?
The original one, yeah. Wow. So she'll try to watch that one at some point during the holiday season.
I'm not going to lie. I watch Muppets Christmas Carol a lot.
Shh. Wifey is a big Muppets fan, so if there's some movies I think that she enjoys watching, like It's a Wonderful Life, she'll watch that by herself. If she'll ask me if I want to join.
She watched Miracle on 34th Street?
I don't think she does Miracle on 34th Street. But Muppets, though, she will try to get Franklin to sit down and watch Muppets with her. Last year, he wasn't as into it. He was more into Charlie Brown than he was into Muppets last year. Maybe this year, a Muppets Christmas Carol, he'll be more into this year.
You know what's so weird? You know what my family's staple was growing up? It just never resonated with me. I don't know why, but it was March of the Wooden Soldiers.
Really?
Yeah, that was the, like, every Christmas that comes on. Every single Christmas. And it just never hit with me. I don't know why. But my entire family is obsessed with that movie.
Franklin, we have Nutcracker Soldier Christmas dolls around the house. And he is obsessed with playing with those. I don't think, though, he has sat down and watched the Nutcracker in its entirety, so...
You know what else my family did a couple of times? And I don't know. Hit me up on Twitter if your family ever did this too. My family around the holidays a lot would put on The Wizard of Oz. And I don't know why. It's not a Christmas movie by any stretch.
Not even, no.
But they associated it with Christmas. And a lot of times at my uncle and aunt's house, who would have Christmas every year, we would watch, part of the watching would be Wizard of Oz.
We did do Home Alone, she and I, last year. And then at some point during the holiday season, either if it's on a network or if I'm just sort of by myself, like, I'll throw Die Hard on just because they got to do Die Hard during the holiday season.
That's the most cliche sports radio argument of all time.
It's Die Hard
a Christmas movie. It's you know what that's done for me? It's ruined freaking Die Hard.
Just I enjoyed the movie.
I
so,
love
so
it
much.
Too, but I all I hear is arguments of sports talk you're in my head just
and then it spins off into other things.
Yeah,
into, well, it came out during the summer. Well, so did Miracle on 34th Street. Well, you can't have the movie without Christmas. Well, if Die Hard's a movie, then Gremlins has to be a Christmas movie too. Okay, Gremlins is a Christmas movie. Make Gremlins a Christmas movie too, then. How about
that? You know what we could do? We could literally script that segment, tape it, put it on YouTube, and go viral.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like two sports talk radio host and producer go back and forth on is Die Hard a Christmas movie, and we literally have a script.
I thought the argument was going to be over like 4 or 5 years ago because they actually released a Christmas-themed Die Hard DVD.
Really?
Yeah, it came in like the tin cookie can or whatever.
Yeah,
that Christmas,
yeah, yeah.
It came in a tin can and it had like the sweater designs on it. So they actually played it up to where it was, hey, guys, just we're not doing this in a summer box. We're not doing this in a spring. We're doing it in a Christmas box, this Die Hard release. So just for all you folks that are having an argument right now, you can put this thing to rest because here you go. But alas, there are some folks who will plant that flag on that hill and not give up. But, again, we're not going to get into that because, again, that's a trope, if you will, a sports talk radio trope.
Yeah, Orin and I could sit here for the next 6 minutes and do that argument as if, like, it was literally scripted for a movie because that's how many times we both each heard all the points, all the counterpoints, and then as Orin pointed out astutely, all of the tentacles that come out of that, we could do it all like we're practicing for a play.
I will say this about it, though. In the same way that you have the hot dog is not a sandwich, it's a sandwich. And then back in the day on Twitter when they had what color is this dress?
Yes.
The folks who were on one side are always going to be on that one side. They will never, ever, ever, ever leave that side. So depending on what side you're on, you can go ahead and say right now, that's going to be my side for all eternity on any of those arguments.
All right, last one, and we'll let you hear from Raheem Morris tomorrow. I mean, he spoke. Guys, can we just – this is a more interesting conversation at this point. Can we just be honest? Animated Grinch or Jim Carrey Grinch?
We have not done the animated Grinch yet. We have – excuse me, the Jim Carrey Grinch yet. We have done the animated Grinch. It's funny you mention that because wifey is very much into the scary movie and like the Halloween, like the scary aspect of things. There was a coffee shop when Franklin was first born, so he was a September baby. This is December, so he's like three months old. They were doing a photo shoot with both the Grinch and Krampus, and Brittany thought it would be the most hilarious thing ever if we took our baby, who was still very much an infant, very much just out of newborn stage, took him to this coffee shop to have a photo shoot, and I had a buddy playing the Grinch. Krampus, we did not know who this guy was, but he was fully into the character, talking about eating babies and everything. Brady thought it would be cute if we took him there, and we got a photo with Krampus holding our kid like he literally was about to munch down on our kid. We got a photo with him and the Grinch, and I swear to God, this is the single most side-eye, angry emotion I have ever seen in this child, then and now. He gave us a face and had a fist clenched. Like, if y'all don't get me the hell out of here right now.
Like the Arthur meme?
Oh, my gosh. I'll show you the picture of it during the break here. But, like, it was hilarious because he's 3 months. He has no idea what's going on. But he was fully aware. And even he looks at the photo now and he's like, yeah, that's me. I was angry. Like, how do you know you were angry with 3 months old? You have no idea what – you have no – understanding of what your emotions were at that point.
No, it's all about the vibes, man.
The
vibes were off, and he knew it.
It was so funny that Hugh took the photo and reposted it on his Facebook and Twitter. But look at this angry-ass kid. Can't believe they did this to him.
And you know, listen, your wife was trying to embody the spirit of...
She was trying to do something funny, cute.
Of an alternative Christmas family photo.
I wasn't as much into it as she was. That's what it was like. I don't know if this is a good idea. But it made for a very – and we turned it into a Christmas ornament and a Christmas gift around the house. But, no, it was just – like the moment. Oh, hold on 1 second. I think I'm gonna find it. The moment that he saw the grins. Like it was magical seeing his look when he saw the Grinch and just how angry he was. All right, I'm going to send this picture to you. This is classic.
I can't wait to see it. Young Franklin in his prime doing what he does, giving side eye and making us all remember, don't bleep with me, y'all.
Don't mess with me, y'all.
Yeah, don't do it, because I will be 6'7" in just a couple of years.
This is not going to end well. I will remember this.
Yeah, I will remember and document and file away.
It's going to come through here in a second.
Each and every one of you, as I wait for this picture. That'll do it for Chris Thomas tonight. Appreciate her. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Dude, I told you.
This is real.
This is real. Oh my God. Look at his face.
I may have to post this now.
Look at his face, dude.
This literally doesn't look real. Like, his face looks AI, Orin. His face looks fake. That's incredible.
He was so mad at us.
This is a top five all-time picture
he
ever
was
taken.
So mad at us
in human history.
And when you're sitting there smiling, the clenched fist, and it looked like, hey, I'm over this, y'all. I'm done.
That's one of the best payoffs I've ever had in my entire life. That's incredible. Wow. All right. That'll do it for Chris Thomas tonight. We'll talk to y'all tomorrow. We'll get into Raheem Morris more in his future or not future with the team.
Night, 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 night,